I'm Montse Alvarado. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
And now, welcome the next Vice President of the United States, Tim Walz.
It's official. Kamala Harris names her running mate. We look at the pro-abortion records of the Harris-Walz ticket.
She would be the most pro-abortion president in U.S. history.
Live Action's Lila Rose weighs in on presidential candidates and the implications this election could have on the pro-life movement.
So the narrative out there is that abortion, chemical abortion, is safer than Tylenol. That is not true.
A study shows the rise of chemical abortions and highlights alarming methods some women are using to abort their babies.
After Roe was overturned, he was the first governor in the country to sign a new law that enshrined reproductive freedom as a fundamental right.
Tim Walz fills the Democratic ticket in the race for the White House. The current governor of Minnesota not only has a strong pro-abortion record, but also one that is anti-pro-life. Vice President Harris made the announcement official on Tuesday morning, hours before a campaign rally where she introduced her nominee. Some are calling the Harris-Walz ticket the most extreme abortion supporters ever to run in a presidential race. Planned Parenthood Action Fund, the lobbying arm of the abortion provider, called the announcement of Walz as running mate, quote, huge. The organization officially endorsed Harris in July, writing, "Vice President Kamala Harris is the only person running for president that we can trust to protect access to abortion." The progressive duo are known for pushing access to abortion without any limits whatsoever.
In Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. When Vice President and I talk about freedom, we mean the freedom to make your own health care decisions.
And with Tim Walz by my side, when I am President of the United States and we win majorities in the United States Congress, we will pass a bill to restore reproductive freedom, and I will proudly sign it into law.
Walz targeted pro-life pregnancy centers in Minnesota, pulling funding from them and claiming that they were misinforming women simply because they don't offer abortion. Walz has also been vocal about access to in vitro fertilization, sharing his personal story of using IVF after being unable to have children with his wife for 8 years. While the Democratic Party uses abortion as a selling point, the Republican Party has backed away from the pro-life movement. It was barely mentioned at the Republican National Convention, and Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance has openly supported access to abortion pills. Pro-life leaders hope that faith helps guide voters at the polls.
I think the pro-life movement is so deeply connected to our faith, because Jesus is giving us the model of love. Here is my body given for you. And abortion is, I'm going to take from you. I'm going to take, even kill you for my own sake. So abortion is the opposite of what our faith teaches.
Lila Rose was just one of the many speakers featured at the Napa Institute's annual summer conference. The Napa Institute gathers some of the nation's greatest Catholic lay and religious leaders for a time of formation, discussing hot-button issues from a Catholic perspective. I had the opportunity to attend this year's conference along with 700 other attendees. This year's theme, What It Means to Be Human, explored human dignity from a variety of perspectives, including, of course, the pro-life perspective. I did have a chance to speak with Lila Rose, founder of Live Action and a pro-life nonprofit aiming to expose the abortion industry. I asked her about her take on today's political landscape.
Lila, the reality of the pro-life movement today is very different from 2 years ago. And I've asked you this question before on the air, but never now with what we have in the political environment today. What are your feelings about the pro-life movement post-Dobbs, post the overturning of Roe versus Wade?
Well, the overturning of Roe v. Wade was a tremendous victory, a tremendous milestone for the movement. But in many ways, it was the beginning of a new war, a fight that we knew was always coming, which was, we have to change culture. You can get the opportunity to ban abortion state by state, but if the culture hasn't been changed on life, if people are ignorant or confused or hurting and they're not connected to the resources that they need, then we're not going to win this movement for life. And so the pro-life movement now, in a way, we're just getting started. Mm. And there's a ton of work to do. And there are some defeats that we've had at the state level politically, but I'm really focused on the culture. That's what Live Action focuses on, because we need to change hearts and minds. Many people don't even know what abortion really is. They don't know the sacredness of their own life or of other lives. They don't know all the resources that exist for women who might become pregnant and be struggling. The Pregnancy Resource Center is the amazing organizations that exist to support them. So our job is to educate and help people know the truth and then be that point of, yes, hard truth, but also encouragement and inspiration that there is a better path here for women and for our culture, and that path is life.
Do you see that the conversation, at least in Congress and at the federal level, has opened up, I guess at the state level too, has opened up a little bit more to talk about resources for women in a way that you couldn't do while Roe was in place?
I think definitely a lot of, especially if you're a politician and you're pro-life, you need to be talking about that. So they're getting that memo, I think, to some degree, that they should be talking about the thousands of pregnancy resource centers that exist. And politically, we can be doing more to give more cash credits, I think, for children, better maternity and paternity leave for families. I think there's more we can do to help American families. I think that should be the focus of any pro-life politician, in addition to protecting life and banning abortions. I do think there are some struggles that we're seeing right now in the Republican-Democrat parties where, unfortunately, in many ways, they're moving. I mean, the Democrat Party has already been very pro-abortion, but the Republican Party seems to be softening on life. And I think that's really the wrong move politically, first of all. And it's also very disappointing, because the reality is this is a time to fight more than we ever have for life and to not give up and to have a better vision for the culture. And so I'm hoping that, you know, whatever fear that is gripping a lot of politicians right now, as we double down on our educational work, our campaigning, we can reinvigorate not just culture, but also politics down the line.
Let's talk about that a little more. That announcement from the RNC that they would weaken their platform on life, when that was such a winning issue 8 years ago, not just four, 8 years ago, it was really the winning issue for them, and the one that shifted a lot of people who were reticent to come out and vote for a figure like President Trump. What are you seeing as a reaction to that? Is the pro-life movement being vocal enough about that disappointment?
It's a very good question, and I will say I understand, you know, fellow compatriots in the pro-life movement, leaders that don't want to draw attention to it, quite frankly. They don't want to criticize, you know, the Republican, you know, nominee for president, President Trump, or Vice President J.D. Vance now. They don't want to criticize because they are concerned about the extremism from the pro-abortion side on the in the Democratic Party. That is true. The Democratic Party is absolutely more pro-abortion than the Republican Party, but the Republican Party is softening, like you said, and we need to be unafraid. Listen, our job as voters is not to give undying loyalty without any demands to one party or another. That's tribalism. Our job is to vote our conscience. Our job is to speak the truth, even when it's popular and unpopular. And there is something to be a loyal opposition, to say, listen, you said you were pro-life. You said that you wanted to defend all human life. Why are you compromising now? Why are you supporting, as an example, abortion pills? You know, right now the Trump fans ticket is in support of abortion pills, which are 60% of all U.S. abortions. So it's our job to call that out. We still, that doesn't mean we're going to go vote for the Democrat side if you're pro-life, because they're even more pro-abortion all the way until birth. But we can't pretend like this is okay. We have to stand up for the truth and then work really hard on education, educating people, changing hearts and minds on abortion.
Now, J.D. Vance is someone who has come on Pro-Life Weekly and talked about the importance of protecting women so that they have a real choice. That's actually something that he doubled down on. He said pregnancy resource centers, all of the different things that you could do. This is when he was discussing issue one in Ohio, which unfortunately was a losing amendment for protection for life in Ohio. But he did his best to really articulate a pro-life position that was fueled by his conversion to the faith and his views on human dignity. He seems to have been either convinced not to talk about it or convinced to shift his position. How can we encourage people who do have a strong pro-life stance to continue to carry it into their politics as they rise in the ranks?
They need to hear from us. If we don't say anything about the fact that, yes, J.D. Vance, who's a converted Catholic here, he has campaigned on life before, and if we don't say anything about the fact that he's now saying he supports abortion pills, he's going to think that's okay as a politician. And we need to say, no, it's not okay. We want you to succeed. We want you to do what's right. We want to back you. But you can't go back the killing of preborn children in the first trimester via abortion pills. You can't. It's unacceptable. So I think we need to speak up. I think that's the job of voters, to speak up.
A lot of people miss that continuity between the idea of the first trimester and abortion pills and surgical abortions. They think one is worse than the other. How are you trying to inform people about that line where if you're pro one and or against one and not against the other, you are not educating the culture. You're not actually making the significant shift.
I think we're buying into the abortion industry's lies to pretend like there's a distinction when there's not a distinction. One is a chemical pill that basically kills the baby via starvation and a forced miscarriage. The other one is a technical a procedure that rips the baby into pieces. I mean, they're both horrific. They both kill the same baby. So the reality is abortion pill is indistinguishable, morally speaking, from the surgical abortion procedure. So I think we just have to educate on this because, again, the opposition will want us to think that, oh, it's just like a period. It's not even an abortion. It's not taking a life. And they'll succeed in their lives if we don't set the record straight.
What about in terms of trauma to the woman? A lot of people forget that deep, deep, deep wound. We do talk about it in terms of surgical abortion. We talk about it in terms of miscarriage, frankly, as well, which does happen earlier most of the time in pregnancy. But we don't talk about it in terms of abortion pills.
The abortion pill is incredibly traumatic. We just did a whole series actually using the voices of women who've endured abortion pills and the physical and emotional risks that come with it for them. It lands women in the emergency room. It's killed women. It's killed over a dozen women, the abortion pill. It's something that is incredibly traumatic for them. They're bleeding sometimes for weeks on end in their own homes. So, yeah, education is key. And to say, listen, there is help for you. If for any woman who's facing an unexpected pregnancy, there is help, there's resources and support. And let's make sure that she gets that so she never feels like she has to turn to the abortion industry.
Let's talk about the Democrats. The strategy with Kamala Harris as the new nominee, she has been going state by state, campus by campus, talking about abortion since before she launched her campaign. It seems a little bit like they are forcing the conversation around abortion, and opponents or any of their potential political rivals are afraid to have the Democrat conversation. What can you tell us about Vice President Harris's stance on abortion?
A few things that you should know. She's the first candidate to actually, and VP now, candidate for president, to have toured an abortion clinic as part of her campaign and part of her position as VP to say, oh, this is so great what they're doing here. She literally physically went to an abortion clinic and toured it as some sort of a press event to celebrate abortion. She's invited abortionists to the White House. She was the one who raided pro-life journalists for exposing the selling of baby body parts in California. She raided their homes on behalf of Planned Parenthood while she was accepting campaign dollars from Planned Parenthood, very corrupt. And she tried to prosecute pregnancy resource centers when she was the Attorney General of California for being pro-life, not wanting to post abortion ads in their pro-life centers, which is what she wanted them to do. So it's extraordinary how pro-abortion Kamala Harris is, and it would be devastating if she became the president for the preborn and the cause for the preborn.
When we think about marriage and the family and the way that the family unit is crumbling in America today, with abortion as the front and center issue that she's campaigning for, do you think Vice President Harris is incapable of then creating policies that bolster the family and protect the family?
I think that her policies would be very anti-family by default. She's very pro-abortion, and you know, I think the left platform on family is the vision of family is not the correct vision. The vision of family is whatever adults want to adopt or create kids via in vitro, they should have them. Children are not, their innocence is not protected. Promoting the LGBTQ plus ideology to young people in schools, it's very dangerous for families. So I think we have to fight back against that ideology and that promotion of it in politics via Harris and others.
There's a rumor or a trope that many politicians like to use, which is, I'm not trying to tell you to do anything with your religion. I'm not trying to impose anything on your religion. I just want you to leave me alone so that I can have abortions, have transgender surgeries, etc. It's not about me imposing anything on you. It's about you imposing something on me. But the rise in religious freedom issues and religious freedom claims over the last 10 years and the inability of anyone to partner with the federal government and use federal dollars, which are taxpayers from both sides of the aisle, to help in health care, help in anything, pregnancy resource centers being front center one of them. That threat to religion and to religious freedom and to anyone who believes differently is significant. Have you seen that change, that shift?
I mean, it's a convoluted argument to say that you're pushing your religion on me when you are the one who's promoting gender ideology and abortion. You can oppose gender ideology and abortion simply from common sense. It has nothing to do with some divine revelation that a religion or a person believes that they receive. In fact, it's very clear when you look at the science of when life begins, that life begins before birth. And to end a life before birth is violating the basic principle of a right that they have to live, of the human right to life, which is the first right. And when it comes to gender ideology, the science is very clear. When you have, you know, an XX or an XY chromosome, you have a biological male or a biological female, they are male or they are female. And, you know, a gender dysphoria that they may have, a mental condition that they may have, doesn't change the biological reality. And for us to play ultimately unscientific games, I believe that what they're representing with gender ideology and the cult of abortion, it is its own religion to say that I can kill if I want to and I can change my gender if I want to. That doesn't go off of science, common sense. That is almost an invention. That is an invention. And so if anything, they are inventing a religion that is nonsensical, that is harmful to the human person, and then they're blaming common sense for being some sort of a religion when, no, this is simply common sense that anyone can see.
Anyone who is watching the unfolding of this new political reality, these kind of firsts, a lot of firsts, the first time that you have in a very, very long time that you have an assassination attempt against a candidate, and then a week later you have this announcement that a sitting president is stepping down and not running in a campaign 3 weeks before, sorry, 3 months before, you really have to make a decision. How do individuals in the pro-life movement and Catholics in particular discern their vote? What are the parameters for that discernment?
I mean, we're living in incredible times, like you just said, an assassination attempt. The sitting president who had the nomination is now just stepping out and handing it to his VP or trying to hand it to his VP. I think there are a few principles that we can always look to as Catholics. Number one, we have to always vote our conscience. And we may have an inspiration. You know, the Holy Spirit, I think, is speaking to his people right now to inspire people to take prophetic stands. So always vote your conscience. Number two, sometimes we have to vote, or we may be called to vote for the lesser of two evils. Unfortunately, we're dealing with that right now in today's election because you have the Democratic Party, which is extremely pro-abortion. We talked about the record of Kamala Harris, which is, I mean, outlandishly pro-abortion. She tours abortion clinics. She persecutes pro-life people. And then you have the record of Trump, which, yes, as president, he did some pro-life things, and we should celebrate that. But now he is campaigning on a partially pro-abortion platform. He's saying that abortions in the first trimester are okay. There's these exceptions for abortions that are okay. So I think many voters will look at the candidates and say, okay, I have to say, what is the lesser of two evils here with my vote? And I think that can be a very prudent way to move forward. That being said, I do think we need to make our voices heard as people of faith to say, we want leaders that are not perfect, no one is perfect, but leaders that will stand for the truth and stand for human rights and stand for what's best for this country. And abortion is not best for this country. Abortion is not for human rights. Abortion is not the killing of a child. There's no truth behind it's okay to kill a child. That's not standing for a truth, it's standing for a lie. And so we should urge our candidates to have decency, to have truthfulness, and say that we want you to do that. If you want us to rally for you, if you want us to campaign for you, you need to stand up in the truth.
In terms of federal elections, I think that we've really run the gamut. But at the state level, you have 6 or 7 potential state-level constitutions that might shift with ballot initiatives. And Governor DeSantis has been pretty gung-ho, saying that he wants that to be a big win in Florida. Yeah. He wants to protect life in Florida. There are a couple of others who have said the same, and some who have said the opposite. What is it that people can do to bolster the state-level reality and their local reality, knowing that the federal reality probably will not be one that reflects a protection for life.
I think we need to get out and mobilize. If you're in one of the states where there might be a ballot initiative on life in your state, you need to be mobilized. Here's the thing. The opposition is pouring tens of millions of dollars, Monse, into these abortion elections in the midterms and then in some of these state ballot referendums. They are pouring tens of millions, up to the hundreds of millions of dollars into these things with pro-abortion lies. Pro-abortion campaigning. We need to respond. We need to be out there. Every single voice, every single comment on social media, every single post, every single letter to the editor, every single call to your local lawmaker, it makes a difference. It will be a self-fulfilling prophecy from the pro-abortion side if they say, well, life doesn't win in an election, and the pro-lifers or the pro-life politicians are just quiet because they say, oh, life doesn't win in an election. Well, it won't win if we don't try.
Now, you're a mom, you're a leader in the pro-life movement, obviously you're a woman, and we're looking at potentially the first ever female president of the United States, should Vice President Harris win the nomination and win the election, who would be pro-abortion. Is there such thing as feminism without abortion?
Of course. I mean, the early feminists, who were many of them Christian, very pro-family women, many of them were pro-life. And this idea that to be pro-woman is to be anti our superpower as women to bring life into the world, I think it is so offensive to women. It's so denigrating of us as women. You know, what is so unique and different about a woman from a man is that we can be mothers. And men alone can be fathers. And so we should be nourishing that, celebrating that. Not every woman is called to be a biological mother. Many women, I believe, are called to be emotional or spiritual mothers. I think that's a very powerful thing that women alone can do. And we should celebrate that. A feminism that rejects the core of what it means to be feminine, woman, motherhood, is an empty and broken feminism that can never, it can never actually create future followers, because there's no longevity to that. But if we, I think, are unabashed in saying, you know, the best woman, the best vision of a woman is a woman who, in her full maturity and her leadership and her strength, can now go on and help others and give back as she was given to, I think that's the way of the future. That's the only way we're going to move forward as a country, and that is an authentic feminism.
To hear more of Lila Rose's commentary on a variety of pro-life issues like this one, you can listen to her podcast, now streaming on demand on EWTN and on the EWTN app or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Visit ondemand.ewtn.com. I had the opportunity to speak with many Catholic influencers at the Napa Institute, including the president of Students for Life of America, Kristen Hawkins. We'll show you her complete interview next week here on EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. But before that, here's a preview.
We're getting these young people out to state legislatures to advocate for pro-life laws, door knocking. You know, that's the argument we're making, is we don't have to win over the entire youth vote, because we know when you look at the demographics, younger voters tend to vote more liberal, more progressive. But if we can just shift the youth vote 2 to 3 percentage points in a state, that changes everything.
The full interview will be aired next week here on EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to tune in. When we return, a new heartbeat protection law takes effect in one state, and another is grappling with enacting a pro-life trigger law. Plus, an alarming new study on the rise of unsupervised abortions, and OBGYN shares her insights on the data. The Society of Family Planning, a pro-abortion access group, says clinical-provided abortion volume this year is higher than the previous 2 years. For the first time since their research began in 2022, a national monthly total of abortions exceeded 100,000. In the three most recent months of data collection, January to March 2024, they observed between 94,000 and 102,000 abortions per month. That data includes only clinician-approved abortions, both chemical and surgical. The report also indicates that states with strong pro-life laws have seen a massive decline in abortions by clinicians in states, which may average to more than 9,000 lives saved per month across 14 states seen on your screen, including Alabama, Idaho, North Dakota, and Tennessee. Unsupervised abortion attempts are on the rise, according to a new study by the American Medical Association. self-managed abortions rose from 2.4% in 2021 to 3.4% in 2023. Those numbers are conservative, according to the study, given that abortion numbers are typically underreported. Adjusting for the underreporting, experts estimate some 7.1 women took part in a self-managed abortion in 2023. The researchers, some of whom have ties to Planned Parenthood and the ACLU, blame the rise on pro-life laws enacted in multiple states. They say women are afraid of legal retribution or criminalization. But in the study itself, when they asked why women attempted self-managed abortion, less than 6% said it was because it's illegal. Dr. Christina Cerucci, a board-certified OBGYN, says there isn't much weight to this study.
Now, they are concluding that self-managed abortion increased after Dobbs. But interestingly, if you look at the details of the study, they're saying it increased from 2.4% to 3.4%. But they give the margin of error, what's called the confidence interval, and those overlap. So you really can't say there's any increase. And secondly, it's a survey-based study, which even the authors admit there's significant bias in the survey-based study.
Dr. Cerucci says any rise in self-managed abortion could be related to the availability of chemical abortion pills, which can now be obtained without a doctor's visit and through the mail. The research indicates that chemical abortions accounted for 18% of unsupervised abortions in 2021. That number grew to 24% in 2023. But other methods were also attempted, including 29% taking emergency contraception, 25% taking herbs, 28% using alcohol or other controlled substances, and alarmingly, 21% of women who tried to abort their baby by hitting themselves in the stomach. In Utah, the state Supreme Court held a suspension of a pro-life trigger law. That law immediately took effect after the overturning of Roe in June of 2022, and just days later was suspended after lawsuits were filed. The trigger law would prohibit abortions except in cases where the mother's life is at risk or there's a deadly fetal abnormality. Utah's Supreme Court ruled that the pro-life law will remain blocked until a lower court can assess its constitutionality. Abortion is legal right now in Utah up to 18 weeks. We will update you on this case as it evolves in the courts. Voters in South Dakota may not have abortion on the ballot this November after a recent state Supreme Court ruling. The pro-life organization Life Defense Fund says an extreme pro-abortion state constitutional amendment would legalize abortion up to the point of birth. They filed a lawsuit to stop the measure, alleging that the pro-abortion group behind it got signatures for the ballot under false pretenses. After some legal back and forth in the lower courts that halted the lawsuit, the state Supreme Court ruled the lawsuit can proceed. South Dakota's Secretary of State has until August 13th to inform county auditors that measures will be on November's ballot. A heartbeat law prohibiting abortions after 6 weeks or when a heartbeat is heard in the womb took effect in Iowa last week. There are limited exceptions in cases of rape, incest, or when the life of the mother is in danger. Previously, abortion in Iowa was legal up to 20 weeks of pregnancy. In 2022, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled that there was no state constitutional right to abortion. Iowa joins at least 13 other states with pro-life laws. EWTN News' sister entity, the Catholic News Agency, has an interactive map on abortion measures that will be voted on this November. Visit CatholicNewsAgency.com to learn more. Thanks for watching our program today. You can follow us on our social media channels on X, Facebook, and Instagram to stay informed on the latest pro-life issues. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter as well, the Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life, for news right in your inbox. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.